podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Welcome to the TWS Sports Podcast.
The question is darts really a sport?
It was the worst tackle I've ever seen.
Fair play to Joe Root, it was a great knock.
There's nothing like a good derby match.
It was easily the best 7-iron I've ever hit.
Right, come on lads, let's crack on.
Hello and welcome to the TWS Sports Podcast with me, Adam Millichip. I'm joined as always by my colleague and good friend, Nigel Boot. And I'm also joined by our two co-hosts, Tom and Thomas, who are both students at Tetnall Wood Special School in Wolverhampton. So just to remind our listeners, Tetnall Wood School is a school for children and young adults with autism. And we have set up this podcast to provide our pupils with a fantastic opportunity to speak to a range of sportsmen and women on a weekly basis. So boys and Nigel, how are you all?
We're doing fine, thank you.
Good. I'm delighted to say we are joined by a special guest today. Singer, actor, producer and host of his own talk sports show and big football fan, Johnny Owen. Hi, Johnny. How are you?
I'm very good. Thanks, Adam. It's a delight and a pleasure to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Johnny, what have you been up to this week?
Well, this week, Tom, I've been preparing for a show that I do every Sunday on Talk Sport, which is called Johnny Owen and Friends. So just preparing the guests and the subjects that will be addressed or I'll be talking about on the show. I also write a weekly column for the Times newspaper. That goes out every Sunday, so I've been writing that this morning. And then I head down to London tomorrow after I've had my jab. I've had my second jab tomorrow, lads. Showing my age now. So, yeah, I'm getting that sorted. So, yeah, this week, Tom, mostly just preparing for the Talk Sport show, the Times column. I also do a lot of work for Nottingham Forest Football Club. I live in Nottingham for part of the week. I look after their media and communications and stuff like that there. So just been doing stuff like pre-season ticket sales and also preparing sort of like stuff for the manager, because I think there'll be a busy summer of transfers and whatnot. So yeah.
This podcast of ours is pretty new and it's similar in a way to a radio show. How do you find TalkSport?
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I think you get used to over time, Adam, with, you know, experience and stuff. You speak really well, you know, as long as people can understand you and they can see that you're passionate about the subject. I think that's the most important thing, you know. I've done it for many, many years now, nearly 20 odd years, you know, but I still get a little tingle, a little buzz when I start doing it, you know, and I can make mistakes and I can have to re-record stuff even now, you know, and I've done it live on air. I've got things wrong. There's a 7-second delay button on TalkSport where if you say something wrong, they can press it and they can get rid of it. And for the first time ever, about 3 months ago, I swore. I said the F word just in the middle of something and I don't know why I did it. I was talking to Nigel Clough, Brian Clough's son, and I just went F in the middle of a sentence. And luckily, they've got this 7-second delay. So, yeah, it's just something that I think, you know, you learn over time and you learn to sort of, you know, become better. But I don't think there's ever a time when you're perfect. I think it's a constantly evolving thing, you know.
Definitely. We'll keep practicing, boys.
Absolutely.
Johnny, this is a sports podcast. But briefly, I'd like to move away from sport and talk a little bit about music.
Oh, yeah.
Because you formed a band in the 1990s, was it? Which, in my view, is the best time for music ever.
Yeah.
And you're in the Pocket Devils. Would you mind just talking to us a little bit about that, please?
Yeah, of course. I was in a band. I was in my late teens. I'm from a town called Merthyr Tydfil, which is in South Wales. And I was really into sort of indie music. I loved the Stone Roses and the Happy Mondays when I was sort of like in my mid-teens in the late 80s. And you gravitate towards similar, you know, people with similar tastes, Nigel. And there were some lads in my town who were playing guitar. I played guitar. The lad that I was very friendly with, he was a better guitarist than me, so it was decided that I would play the bass. So I ended up on the bass, he ended up on the guitar. And then we found some other like-minded people and we kind of started just playing gigs, really, the classic story, you know, playing the local pubs and people started to follow us. And, you know, the era was fantastic. It was right in the middle of Britpop, you know, Oasis arrived, Blur. So there was a big appetite for bands, you know. So there was lots of venues to play and lots of bands to support. We were very lucky. We even signed a record deal. We didn't quite make the top 40. We got in the top, I think we got to number 72 or something. But we had a great time, you know. We sort of toured with some big bands. I played with INXS and Catatonia and Stereophonics, all those kind of bands. And that was kind of like my gateway, I think that's the modern term, for getting into media work, really. I was I was in this band. I was used to performance. I was in that world. I'd got to know people in Wales, you know, people that worked in, you know, drama and music. And I ended up sort of acting from there, really. So it was something I really enjoyed and really glad I did. Like you said, it was a great era to play in. There was some fantastic music. It was a great sort of atmosphere around at the time. And yeah, that's where my roots were really started in a band.
Who were your music influence? Like, where did you get inspired from?
Well, you know, Tom, that's a great question. When I was very young, I had an older brother, Chris, and he was great. He was 6 years older than me, so he was a punk in the late 70s. So he was really into the Sex Pistols and the Clash. But he also liked a band called The Jam, who were what we call a mod band then, with Paul Weller as the singer. So I really got into The Jam. And because I got into The Jam, I read a lot about Paul Weller, and he told us all about a band called The Beatles. So I really got into The Beatles then because of The Jam. So I really got into sort of like 60s stuff. This is in the mid-1980s, and I was like really into it. And I learned the guitar, trying to listen to The Beatles and The Rolling Stones and The Kinks. And then, like I said, I met this other lad who was into very similar stuff, and that's why we ended up forming a band. So I think my two biggest influences were definitely The Jam, Paul Weller, and The Beatles.
What about you, Tom? Are you into music?
Yeah, I've always been into multiple genres, but... I also really respect the past. Like, I like multiple bands. Very few music I like nowadays. I'm more into stuff from the past, to be honest.
So who's your favourite?
Well, I like the Beatles. I also like Nirvana. I also like Coldplay. And I also like Gorillaz. Yeah.
Brilliant. Some great bands there.
Some good bands there, Tom. Man after my own heart.
Yeah, I had some great bands as well in my day. My favourites would be ABBA, the Bee Gees, the Beatles, Michael Jackson, you name them.
Oh, I love all them bands, Tom. Love them all. I'm a massive, massive Bee Gees fan. I was listening to the Bee Gees this morning. Yeah, I was, honestly. Fantastic band. Love them.
What about you, Nige? I know you're dying to say something about music.
Yeah.
What's your favourite, Nige?
Oh, gosh. Like Johnny, The Jam and The Beatles are massive bands for me. But like I say, the 90s for me, that was the time when music to me really came alive. You had the grunge movements.
Yeah.
And you had some fantastic bands from America come through, like Nirvana, like you said. Mudhoney were a band that I loved from that era. And then you have Britpop as well.
Yeah.
So as grunge began to wane, you have Britpop. And like you say, you had bands like Oasis come through. You had Blur. You had The Verve, Garbage. There's so many great bands from that era. It just hasn't been the same since.
That was a great time. I agree totally, boys. Yeah, I think that was one of the golden eras of pop music, wasn't it?
Are there any kind of TV shows and films that really stand out as having a sort of big impact in your career?
The biggest thing that happened to me was there was a very famous author from the 90s with a big book called Trainspotting. His name was Irvin Welsh. And he cast me in a pop music video that he was doing, funnily enough. And then we became very good friends. And then he wrote a few things that I did that did really well, you know, things like Wedding Bells for Channel 4 and a thing called Dose for the BBC. And then from there, then I kind of got like other stuff, which was like mainstream series like My Family and Murphy's Law. And I got Shameless on Channel 4. So it was kind of a progression, really. But the thing that really started me off on that kind of like pathway with acting was I did a series in Wales called Nuts and Bolts back in the mid-90s. And I'm going to show my age now, Tom's. But this is the time. There was only four channels on the TVs then, I think.
I remember watching.
I know. So it was on, we used to call it HTV in Wales. It's called ITV Wales now. But it was on this channel at 7 o'clock. It was a drama series called Nuts and Bolts that ran for 4 years. And I got to be very well known very quickly in Wales because there was only a few channels and lots of people used to watch this TV series. And from that TV series, you get what you call an agent. And then the agent gets you auditions for different things. And then that's how you get more acting work, really. So I'd probably say that it was a Welsh television series called Nuts and Bolts, strangely, from the mid-90s that gave me my start and then sort of set me on my way, I suppose.
Have you turned down any jobs that you now regret? Like,
that's a great question, Tom. On a Thursday morning. Do you know, nothing in the acting sense. My only regret, I suppose. But I think, you know, the thing with regrets is that the past is the past. You've just got to leave it there. You can't change it. So you've just almost got to move on. And I've often thought that sometimes things that I was disappointed I didn't get, I've realized now were for a reason. And I got something else maybe a few weeks later and things like that, you know. So I don't think there's anything that I thought, oh, I wish I'd done that. The only possible thing, if I could change anything, was that when I was in a band, the band were doing really well. And then I went and I got an acting job and I went on to that for about, you know, 9 months, I think. So that meant I had to leave the band. I probably would have stayed with the band just a little bit longer or just kept playing because I really enjoyed that. So my one regret is that I should have stayed in the band a little bit longer just because I enjoyed it and I really liked the lads that I played with. Ultimately, I've been quite happy with where I've ended up and the choices I've made. And I think a good bit of advice I always say to people is, wherever you are at this moment, don't worry about the past. You can't change that. That's gone. And in the future, that's already off in the distance. Just enjoy living in the moment. Just enjoy what you're doing right this second. Like this now. I'm having a great time, really enjoying it. I'm just going to enjoy this.
Good bit of advice.
I can say that's superb advice, that is.
When you were a teenager, you were a boxer. Why didn't you pursue a career in boxing?
Oh, I tell you why, Tom. That's a great question again. Because it hurts when somebody punches you as you get older. And I realized quite quickly, lads, that you have to be really, really good to be a top, top boxer. I mean, I was okay, you know, I did well and I won fights and I won a Welsh Boys Club's vest and all those kind of things. But I can remember fighting somebody very, very good and getting punched at my brain going, I was about 15, wow, that hurt, you know. So I had a bit of a moment of thinking, you know what, I really enjoyed boxing. Again, I'm still friends with lots of the lads that I boxed with. I'm really glad that I did it. It taught me about keeping fit. It taught me respect for other people. It taught me not to any way be a bully, never to use it, you know, outside. I just think it was a really, really good thing to learn for a young man, you know, to box. And I'm really glad I did it, as I said. But ultimately, if you want me to answer that question, I wasn't good enough.
I see there was Johnny Owen, boxer from Merthyr, wasn't there? Is that you named after him or is that just a coincidence?
Interestingly enough, kind of. My name is Jonathan, but obviously nobody calls you Jonathan, do they? You know, when you've got a name that long. So in Wales, there was a boxer called Johnny Owen. Because I was Jonathan Owen, just I think I was about 5 or 6 years of age, people just started calling me Johnny because he was Johnny Owen and quite well known, you know. And it kind of stuck, really. And even to this day, my mother is the only person who calls me Jonathan, especially if I've done something wrong. And even now, people, if they ring the house phone, they'll go, is Johnny there? And she'll go, no, Jonathan is here. Well, that's mother's for you, isn't it?
In my opinion, Johnny, the greatest team in the world, Cardiff City. What's your earliest memory of Cardiff and how did you become a fan?
Well, it was just my local club, Football League club. Simple as that, really. I was born in Merthyr Tydfil, which is about 24 miles north of Cardiff. Merthyr had a really good non-league football team. Cardiff had a league team. They weren't particularly good at that time, but they were the local league team. And my father and my grandfather and my great-grandfather, who obviously I'd never met, just all watched Cardiff and Merthyr. That's what they did, you know. So it was kind of a natural thing, really, for me to be taken to watch Merthyr play and then to go and watch Cardiff play. Cardiff was a little bit more, a little bit more edgy, a little bit more dangerous in the 80s. So I wasn't allowed to go to Cardiff on my own, certainly, until my sort of mid to late teens when I could go with some mates. But it was purely just a geographical thing and a national thing. It was where I was from and it was the local team.
Who was your footballing hero and why?
That's a great question. I really loved a player called David Giles, who played for Cardiff and then he played for Merthyr. He played for Wales as well. I always loved Giles and I was lucky enough to get to know him as I got older. On a world stage, I would probably say that it was like kind of Ian Rush and Mark Hughes. They played for Liverpool and Manchester United when I was a kid and they were Welsh players that were known across the world. So they were the players that I would kind of like mention when I went on holidays as a kid in a Wales top and that kind of stuff. Do you know what I mean? But locally, my favourite players were, for Cardiff, it was David Giles that first season that I went.
Good choice.
Supporting Cardiff over the years, John, has been ups and downs, lots and lots of downs, but there has been a few ups. What's your standout memory? What's your... maybe your favourite game you've been to or a highlight of watching Cardiff over the last couple of years?
Well, there's been So many, really, you know, and even strange games. I was talking to somebody the other day. There was a game that Cardiff got relegated against Bury in, I think it was 1990. And we relegated this game, but the thousands went and the atmosphere was fantastic because that was like kind of being a Cardiff fan and we were, you know, chanting the team even though they'd gone down. It was an amazing day. But the day that I most remember, Adam, that I look back on most fondly, was the FA Cup semi-final against Barnsley. It was just a magical day. You know, I went with great friends. It had snowed that morning, so it was like a white blanket as we drove up the M4. We beat Barnsley. Joe Ledley was a much-loved, you know, Cardiff lad, scored the winning goal. And I can just remember the celebrations after the game were amazing, you know. But my favourite moment of that day was we got back to the Severn Bridge and there were massive queues because there was tolls then. You had to pay to get across the bridge and there was quite a lot of cars and buses. I didn't know that a lot of them were full of Cardiff fans, but my mate in the car started going beep, 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 and somebody went, Siri. Anyway, he kept this going and loads of cars joined in and all the people started getting up the buses and dancing on the tolls and the toll people laughing. And it was just an amazing, spontaneous moment of just joy. And I'll never forget that. And I think that was my favourite moment watching Cardiff City was on the toll bridges of Bristol. Few hours after the game, people just dancing on the motorway, you know, because they'd got to an FA Cup final. So, yeah, that was my favourite moment.
I think that's the wonderful thing about football, isn't it? How it just brings people together like that. And you just get everyone just all together in this moment of absolute joy. And it's just
an
amazing feeling. It's one I've seen many times with Walsall, in fairness.
But when they come, Nigel, it'll be well deserved.
Oh, absolutely. All the more special for us, isn't it?
Can I ask quickly, who do the two Toms support? Have you got football teams, lads?
I support Wolverhampton Wanderers.
Me Wolves too, yeah.
Good lads. Good Wolves. It's a great football club, Wolves. They're fantastic history, you know, and I'm really pleased that they're back up there in English football again. They deserve to be.
It's nice to see, actually, the five people on this podcast, we all support our local team.
Yeah.
<that's a good laughs> you don't get very often.
That's right, yeah. Well done, boys. Good for you.
How do you think Cardiff City will do next season?
I think we'll be all right, Tom. I tell you why. They've got a really good experienced manager, Mick McCarthy, who had a real effect when he came into Cardiff this season. They got a really good bounce and they nearly made the playoffs after being in free fall when a lot of people were worried they were going to get sucked into a relegation battle. So I think they've got a really wise head there. I think he suits Cardiff City. We love a good, solid, organised manager. We're not the kind of team that particularly would be interested in flashy football. In our history, we like winning football. We just like people to put the ball in the net. That's why Neil Warnock was such a great fit for Cardiff. You know, it's just we like those characters. And also, they've got a fantastic striker who, in my opinion, is probably the best striker in the Championship. We've got to keep hold of him. He's called Kiefer Moore. He scored 20 goals last season, more than 20 goals. And he was injured for a few weeks as well. I think he's a terrific player. They also had a very good number 10 called Harry Wilson playing just behind him. They got on loan for Liverpool. If they can possibly get him back, that will be massive. Like I said, I think, you know, Mick will get rid of the people that he doesn't want, get the right people in that he needs the way he plays or for the way he plays. So I think they've got a chance next season. Genuinely, I think they've got a real chance, certainly the playoffs. But the most important thing is keeping hold of Kiefer Moore. I think Adam would agree with it. You know, there's been a lot of scouts. I've heard a lot of scouts. I've been trying to watch him and try and bring him in. I'll tell you a little story that not many people know. I tried to get Nottingham Forest to sign Kiefer Moore last summer. It's the only time I've ever done it. But he went to Cardiff and didn't blame him. But what was interesting was that there was about seven or eight clubs after him. And I think it'll be the same this summer. So if we can hold on to Kiefer Moore, you know, that would be all the better. I didn't mind the fact that he went to Cardiff.
If you could have dinner with three people, who would they be and why?
Got to be alive, Tom, or can they be from any time in history?
Any time.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. That's a really good question. I'd probably go for a bit of a Welsh slant as well. Then I'd go for Richard Burton. I think Richard Burton would be a good laugh. He was a Welsh, famous Welsh actor. I think he'd be an interesting guy to have a few beers with and a bit of a meal. John Lennon. I'd love to meet John Lennon. I was a huge fan of his. And also, there's a guy who was a really famous Welsh politician who was called Aneurin Bevan. And he was the main architect of the National Health Service. He was the man that implemented and put it through. And I think he's one of the most important people in world history, because the National Health Service, as we've all seen, especially this last few years, how important that is to society and to life, and to, you know, to how important it is to our very fundamental well-being. So I'd love to meet him, you know, and also say to him, look what you did, what you created, look how many lives you changed and saved over these, you know, 100 years or whatever it is. I think it's about 75 years. So, yeah, Richard Burton and Aidan Bevan and John Lennon, that'll do me.
Are you cooking for them, Johnny, or are you ordering takeaway?
Or takeaway. Curry, definitely. Yeah, that's my takeaway of choice, curry. I know you do a lot of very nice curries around where you are in the Black Country. So, yeah, if the meal was there, I'd have a recommendation from you boys.
Got a bit of a sports quiz for you.
Okay.
It's called But Is It a Sport? And we've got some sports, whacking weird sports, some of which we've totally made up.
Right.
Some of them are absolutely real. Is it a sport?
Is chess boxing a sport?
Chess boxing. So in chess boxing, you simultaneously play a round of chess.
Yeah.
And then the next round you box. And so you can win by either being knocked out or getting checkmate. Is it real or made up?
Well, if it's not real, that should be a sport. That's a great idea. Can you imagine going back to trying to think again after you've been hit on the head a few times? So somebody, if it's not a sport, patent that, Nigel, let's get it out there as a sport. So I'm going to say that that's a sport. Somebody's got to have thought of that, because that's great. Is it a sport?
I'm afraid we can't patent it. It is actually a real sport.
I think I definitely want to be a better boxer than I am at chess, though.
Imagine. Yes.
This is an interesting one. Underwater rugby.
Okay, so it's rugby, but it's played underwater. But is it a sport, or have we just made it up?
Do you know, that's great again, because there's so many underwater things. Like, and there's like bog snorkeling, and there's so much stuff people do, don't they, underwater and things. I'm going to say that's not a sport. Not a sport.
I'm afraid it is, yeah. They have a special...
Yes.
And there is a sport called underwater rugby. Johnny, Owen, thank you very much for playing.
I was rubbish. I only got one. Very good, lads. Very good indeed.
It's been an interesting few weeks in the world of football, Johnny. So Man City have won the league recently. Leicester won the FA Cup. We've had the Super League that's been and gone very quickly. So let's start with the Premier League. Do you see anyone competing with Man City next year, or are they just too good?
I believe that Chelsea, with this new manager, has done a terrific response since he's come in. I think they could be strong next year as well. And Liverpool probably won't have, you know, that dip at home, certainly, they had this year. I think they lost 5 or 6 on a trot. That's not going to happen. That wouldn't happen, in my opinion, with a full Anfield anyway. So I would imagine that Liverpool and Chelsea, certainly, in my opinion, will be a bit stronger. Manchester United, you know, they need 2 or 3 players, in my opinion, to really be challenging Man City. But it is hard to see past Man City, Adam. I still think Man City will probably win the title next year, but I think it might be a bit tighter because of Liverpool and Chelsea.
What about the Super League? Johnny, do you think that was a non-goer shake from the start, or do you think it'll make a return?
Well, it's an interesting question. I think when I seen the announcement on that Sunday night, I genuinely thought it was a bit of a joke. I was a bit like, I can't be right, you know, because I think there's something fundamental in all us, if you're football fans, that we just all agree in relegation and promotion. And I speak to you as a Cardiff City fan, I've seen his team relegated quite a few times, and Merthyr. It's a horrible experience, but I wouldn't change it. Because that's football, you know. And I think the big thing for me was, once you, and I understand there's an American system which has franchises and there's no such thing as relegation there, but that's a system that's grown up in its own culture and own history over a century. In England and Britain, you know, there has to be relegation and promotion. There has to be that opportunity. Now, people would say to me, well, you know, mostly the top teams win things anyway, so there's no real difference. But we still have to have that dream. There still has to be the idea that a Nottingham Forest, for argument's sake, can come in the late 70s under Brian Clough and win 2 European Cups, you know, because all the big teams still existed then. Juventus, Barcelona, Real Madrid, you know, they were all in existence. But Nottingham Forest were able to do that because they had a great manager. And I believe that there should always be the opportunity for a team to come from nowhere and win things, because that's what makes sport exciting. I mean, as a Welshman in 2016, I went to the Euros and Wales got to a semi-final. It was a ridiculous thing. But ironically, them and Iceland became the story in that tournament. People you know, watched it across the world in their millions, because I think in our hearts, a lot of us still love an underdog. We still love, you know, want somebody smaller to beat somebody bigger. I think it's just something that appeals to the human condition, I believe. And I think sport has to still have that element. And the European Super League didn't have that. And I think that's why there was such a fuss kicked up by it.
Looking at the FA Cup, it was nice to see Leicester, a different team win it this year. What's your kind of FA Cup memories? Have you got any? I know one that stands out for me as a Cardiff fan would definitely be, I think it was 2001, third round, Leeds United, Ninian Park. Was it Scott Young with an 88th or something minute winner to beat Leeds?
Yeah.
Top of the league, top of the Premier League at the time. So that's definitely kind of my FA Cup memory. Is it one that stands out for you, Johnny?
Yeah, that was at that game. It was an amazing atmosphere, that game. And lots of Leeds fans say to me that was the start of their decline over that decade, really. They kind of finished fifth that season, didn't qualify for Europe and all that kind of thing. But yeah, that was an amazing day. It was just an electric atmosphere, and that was the old FA Cup. And you had a feeling, didn't you, that Cardiff were going to compete that day, you know? And we ended up beating them, you know, and they were top of the league. One of the first away games I ever went to was Bristol Rovers with Merthyr in the FA Cup. It took a few thousand Merthyr. And again, the atmosphere was absolutely sensational. It was the FA Cup. It was the local derby-ish, you know, because they're the West Country and we're South Wales. And that was a really strong memory because it was one of my first games away. And when you go away, it's like it's a whole new experience. So, yeah, I mean, kind of like for Merthyr, it would be definitely that cup game against Bristol Rovers. And for Cardiff, I spoke about it earlier, that semi-final against Barnsley was fantastic. The whole cup run that season, that game against Middlesbrough, where we beat them up there, was sensational. But I think, yeah, it probably would be Leeds, wouldn't it? That's a great shot. I think that's the biggest. Oh, no, there was a game against Manchester City where we beat them 1-0, where Nathan Blake scored. That was a great day. That was an amazing day because they were in the top flight then, and nobody expected Cardiff to have any kind of chance. So, that again, that's the magic of the FA Cup. Cardiff against a big team, and they go and win 1-0. So I'll say on this one, the game against Man City where Nathan Blake scored. And I love Nathan as well. He's a top lad.
What are your plans for Nottingham Forest?
Well, I'm on the board there. And so, like I was saying, there's a good manager in now. He's got called Chris Hooton, got great experience. Nottingham Forest are a big club in the Championship. There's a lot of big clubs in the Championship, but it's a very difficult league to get out of. There's some great football clubs in there, like Cardiff, for a good example. They'll be very strong next year. So, you know, the plan is that, you know, to leave Chris, bring his own players in. And to give him a run, he's got great experience, Tom. He's taken Newcastle up, he's taken Brighton up, so you've just got to trust him. So our job really is to make sure that he has the tools available to him that he can do that, you know, budget-wise, what players he can get in. And then I look after sort of the media side of things, so just kind of oversee social media and communications. I've got a brilliant guy that works with me, a West Country boy actually, called Matt, and he kind of like does the day-to-day run of the club and oversees all that. And I'm there just to sort of be, you know, be the guide really above him. But ultimately, Tom, the idea is to get Nottingham Forest promoted. But it's no easy task in the Championship, and a lot of things have got to go your way to make that happen.
Did you go to the Euros in 2016?
I did, Tom. I went to every game except the England game. And there was a reason why I didn't go to that one. My missus, Vicky McClure, who's away filming in London, she was in a series called Line of Duty, and one of her co-stars is a guy called Martin Compston. He plays an Englishman in the series, but he's actually Scottish. Wow. A very strong Scottish accent, which always shocks people when you meet him in real life. And being a Scotsman at that time, of course, they hadn't qualified. So we decided to get married on the day Wales played England. So I had to fly back from France for that game to Scotland for the marriage. And then I flew back. Well, I got a train back out again. And I'm quite glad I missed that game because obviously England beat Wales in injury time. It was a great tournament. Nobody kind of expected Wales to go as far as they did. So everything was a bonus. And do you know what was brilliant about it, lads, was there was just no pressure on Wales. And there's next Euros, nobody really expects, you know, Wales to win every game. We're just going to enjoy being there, enjoy being part of it. And you know what? If we do manage to get through, then fantastic. It's a bonus for everybody. So, you know, that's what the way I always felt in France. I just felt that everybody was out there on a holiday, really, having the best time. And I think the team were a bit like that as well. They were almost on a bit of a jolly. And often when that happens and it all calms down, you know, great things can happen. And that's what happened. Wales ended up sort of playing in the 49th game of a 51-game tournament. If somebody told us Welsh fans we'd be playing in the 49th game of the Euros, we wouldn't have believed it. But it happened. And it was, without a shadow of a doubt, the best summer of my life. 2016. I loved it.
I just want to take you back to one game in particular in that tournament, Wales-Belgium.
Yeah.
Carl Robson-Kanu, middle of the box, turns, past Courtois. What was it like being in the stadium when that goal went in?
It was amazing. And there was this weird thing happening where there was a sort of growing belief from the team and in the stands among the Welsh fans that we were in this, that we had a chance. Now, remember, Belgium were the tournament favourites at that point. So, you know, they had this ridiculous side on paper. You know, everybody from De Bruyne to Hazard to Fellaini was playing for, you know, it was ridiculous. Wales really, you know, were playing with a right back from Reading and a centre forward who was out of contract at Reading. Do you mean Al Robson-Kanu? But we were in this game, you know, and we just seemed to grow into it. And the fans had this sense of belief that we could win it. But nobody would have expected a goal like that to have been scored. But what was great was he scored the goal. And then, of course, Wales were under a bit of pressure because Belgium were pushing forward, as you'd expect. Very good in possession, you know. But then we scored this third goal. And as any football fan will tell you, when you score a goal in injury time that puts you those two goals in front and you know you're going to win, it's probably the best feeling you're ever going to have as a football fan. Because it's that relief of going, we're going to win this. And it was that third goal that when that went in, that was just a moment where I was like, we've just beaten Belgium and winning the semi-finals. And I'll tell you a true story, which is very funny. My great mate Alex, who was next to me, fell to his knees and burst into tears. So we all jumped on him. We all knew what he meant. Because it was just the relief of Wales winning meant that he just burst out crying in the stadium. So it's what we all remember, really, is our mate on that third goal, especially, just falling on his knees and crying. It was a wonderful moment.
So, boys, we've come to the part of the show where we would like to speak to another podcast. I've been contacted by Dan Cianci from Pennsylvania, and he hosts the Daily American podcast. Hi, Dan. Thanks for joining us today. How are you?
I'm good, Adam. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Good. It's my pleasure. Tell us a little bit about your podcast. What is it and what do you talk about?
The Daily American, essentially, I just interview people from all walks of life and share their struggles and their perseverances. It's a non-scripted podcast. We just have a conversation, you know, a little bit about their background. And I'm a firm believer that a lot of people struggle with things on a regular basis, whether that's, you know, PTSD from war or an addiction or a disease. Or, you know, a critical illness, a death of a parent or a sibling or a loved one. And we dive into those situations a little bit, analyze them and really hear what it takes to overcome those circumstances and move past them, putting one foot in front of the other and finding ways to persevere. And I think those stories are key.
Brilliant. Well, thanks for that, Dan. That sounds like a really interesting podcast and I'll definitely check it out. Right, let's get back onto the podcast. Cheers, Dan.
Thank you.
So we had a question from a listener. And if you do want to get in contact with us with any messages in the future, our email address is twssportspodcast@hotmail.com. But our question is in regards to, I'm sure you've had over the last month, thousands of questions about this. Line of Duty, as you mentioned.
Hello, Johnny. I'm a big fan of Line of Duty, and I just wondered, did you ever think that your wife was H?
That's a good question. I didn't think she was H. She would never tell me, and nobody ever believes me on this, but she wouldn't tell me. And I don't ask her. I watch it in real time with the rest of the audience. The only possible thing I do is I do pause it every now and then and say to her, why is he there? And she goes, remember in series two? And I go, oh, yeah, yeah. So it's like having my own sort of series Bible next to me where she can direct me. But no, I didn't think it was her. There was a time in the last series where I thought it might have been Hastings because of the trouble he was getting in. But no, I didn't think that there was it was Vicky. I did know this series that she was going to go, you know, outside the department and then get dragged back in. But no, I never thought it was Vicky ever. And she wouldn't have told me anyway.
I read in an interview, John, that she actually received the script for the last season. And she said, are you interested in it? And you said, no, I want to watch it in real time like everybody else.
I wanted to watch it with everybody else, you see. So she was like going, I know the ending. Would you be interested in knowing? And I was like, nope, don't tell me. Temptress, I'm all right. And I watched it with the rest of the country. And I quite enjoyed doing that because I really enjoyed seeing the reaction and things like that. It got so ridiculous in the end, lads. You love this. The BBC and newspapers were saying to me, will I come on and talk about it? And I was going, I'm not in the series. But yeah, they were asking me to come on. But I politely refused.
Do you think or do you hope there's another series?
Well, it'll be interesting. I think there's a strong demand for it, isn't there? You know, there's lots of people want it. I think the writer, Jed Mercurio, who's another West Country boy, he's a great lad. I think he's from Cannock. He's a genius. He's a fantastic writer. He does that. He does Bodyguard. So I think, you know, there's an appetite for it. I think it's just down to Jed. I think it's down to the writers to decide whether he wants to go there one more time or whatever. But for me, it should be his decision. I would say, Jed, whatever you want to do.
One more quick game, very famous game, Who Am I?
Yeah.
So I'm just going to read out a bit of information about this person and I want to see if you can guess who it is. I signed for Cardiff City in 2006.
Right.
I scored 56 goals for Cardiff. I've also played for both Newcastle United and Sunderland. And I left Cardiff City and rejoined them a few years later.
Michael Chopra. Chops. Probably our... I would say Adam, our best striker of the last 10, 15 years, I'd say.
I'd say so. I used to love watching him and Bothroyd up front.
Yeah, Bothroyd. Just that was a great season.
Unbelievable. Thank you so much, Johnny, for taking the time to chat with us today. We really appreciate it. You didn't have to do it, and we really appreciate you coming on, taking the time to spend with us, chatting about your career, chatting about sport. So I want to say thank you so much, and it means so much to us as a school. Really appreciate it, so thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. And like I said, I've really enjoyed it. Did brilliant. The two Thomases and you, Nigel. And if you want me to come back on again in sort of like 6 months or a year's time, just let me know, mate. Very happy to do it. No problem at all.
Brilliant. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
So our next podcast, boys, any idea who's coming up?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked, Nigel. So our next week's show, we have a footballer who played 61 times in the Premier League. He made 307 appearances for Wolverhampton Wanderers and 185 appearances for his hometown club, Shrewsbury Town. He also played a big part in Wales' success in the 2016 Euros. We'll be joined by the one and only Dave Edwards.
That is a fantastic guest, Adam. Can't wait.
Our TWS Sports Podcast will be released every Tuesday, so make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any episodes. The TWS Sports Podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many other podcast streaming apps. Sports Social Podcast Network.